Okay, we're going to call Senate Energy to order here today. We do have present for the record Senator Wilikowski, Kukesh, and Senator Thomas has joined us. It's the 2nd of April. It's a beautiful spring day out there. It's 11:45, and we have two items on the agenda today. The first is that of Senate Bill 135, the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority, ANGDA, bill by the governor. We have Joe Balash here to present it and some other folks to testify on it. And then we have Senate Bill 162 by Senator Thomas regarding heating fuel energy relief. And so we'll start with Senate Bill 135 and hear from Mr. Balash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name, for the record, is Joe Balash, Special Staff Assistant to Governor Palin for Energy and Resource Issues. Senate Bill 135 is one of three elements in the governor's three-part plan to initiate progress and work on an in-state gas delivery system, specifically looking at what has traditionally been referred to as a bullet line. This bill fits in with the other two elements and is addressing what is the most logical vehicle for work that's pursued by the state of Alaska, the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority. The authority was created by voter initiative in 2002 and it had some very specific assignments to carry out as conceived by the drafters of that initiative. That work was fulfilled, and ANGDA then began to look at other options for bringing gas to market to Alaskans, and they have been engaged in a number of different projects and efforts on sort of a forward-looking basis, but have been doing so in a manner that may not be entirely consistent with the statutory direction provided in AS 41. The bill itself is fairly straightforward. What we're seeking to do is make sure that ANGDA is able to look at gas supply options other than the North Slope. And then also to look at delivery options other than South Central or to Tidewater to market. And this is consistent with the governor's vision that Alaska's natural gas resources should be made available and usable by each and every Alaskan wherever it makes sense. And allowing ANGDA to basically take the blinders off of the horse, so to speak, they can help lead us in that kind of a direction. And so with that, I think I would like to return to two questions that Senator Wilikowski had asked me at the last hearing on one of the other companion bills here.
Okay.
He had asked at that hearing whether or not the administration had asked for a change in leadership at ANGDA. I committed to going back and asking the questions, and so while I had known of the conversations, I wasn't a party to them, so I didn't know specifically what was asked. And so the discussion in those conversations did touch on the leadership of the authority, the corporation, its employees, and while options were explored and discussed, there was no pressure put on the chairman to make any particular change, and I think that's again the nature of the conversation. So while change was discussed and different options for making those changes, that's my understanding of where the conversation went. The other.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, and I appreciate you getting the answers to that. And can you tell me who was a party to those conversations?
My understanding is that those occurred a few weeks ago, and they were conversations that involved the governor, the chief of staff, and the chairman, Mr. Scott Hayworth.
Senator Wilkowski.
And did anyone in the administration ask or suggest that there be resignations from ANGDA?
My understanding is it was not described in that manner. The discussion of how to make some transitions occurred, but I didn't ask if the specific question of resignations was brought up. If you'd like me to further inquire, I can, but the way it was described to me, again, this is, you know, secondhand, is that they talked about the future of ANGDA, the work that ANGDA could be doing, the direction the governor wanted to go, and looking at the options and alternatives available for in-state gas, and that there may need to be some changes in the organization.
And if I could, and since we are discussing an ANGDA bill and kind of the, in a lot of ways, the direction and purpose of where ANGDA is going to develop, going to go, what are the administration's concerns as it pertains to ANGDA?
Well, this actually, if I can go back to the other question that you had asked at the last meeting, it fits in, I think, with the line of questioning here, and through the chair, the question that had been posed, the second question that had been posed, was whether or not any contracts for ANGDA had been denied by the administration. And I've confirmed that there was a contract that was denied, and that was one to pursue initial feasibility of a pipeline going into Western Alaska to deliver North Slope gas. And the reason it was denied is that the appropriation authority cited in the contract document cited an appropriation in the capital budget last year, and there was no mention of delivery to Western Alaska in the discussion there. It was all about Cook Inlet and Prince William Sound destinations. And so the concern then was that there wasn't the proper appropriation in place to fund that kind of work. And so so that contract was denied. And that has basically invited then a question of, okay, what are all the things ANGDA has been doing? And while we know what the original mission and scope of work was for the authority in 2004, the legislature broadened that authority to include not just Prince William Sound, but also Cook Inlet as a potential destination and site of an LNG facility. But ANGDA has been investigating the use of propane from North Slope to deliver to other parts of the state, namely coastal areas and locations along the river system in rural Alaska, that propane could be a better alternative, a more economic and more efficient alternative in many of our villages. And so while that work is commendable, it doesn't it's not explicitly clear that that's something authorized in the statute. And so things like the authority has been engaged in, we want to make sure that we are here today asking for what amounts to forgiveness rather than permission.
Yeah.
And so that is, in large part, what this bill is trying to accomplish.
Senator Wilkowski.
So is this, does this bill address the concerns that the administration has with the direction of ANGDA? And is this bill an attempt to clarify where the administration thinks that ANGDA needs to be going? Or are there other areas that the administration feels Angda needs to be directed towards.
Well, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we think that this language provides the kind of flexibility Angda needs to have, both in terms of meeting the vision of what the governor has for making progress on an in-state natural gas pipeline that would deliver North Slope gas to South Central. However, that is a limited and limiting role that we would like to expand. We would like to see what the options and opportunities are to deliver gas to other parts of the state. We have tremendous opportunities in some parts of Alaska with very rich mineral potential, and in order to develop those mineral resources, you need to have access to efficient transportation, but you also need to have access to energy. And if you can find an anchor tenant user, you can potentially get the infrastructure built out to parts of Alaska that otherwise wouldn't necessarily be able to support economically a pipeline or small line to deliver gas. And so we think there's all kinds of opportunity in the long run and even in the mid run here as we look at our options. And so for the long-term viability of Angda, having the flexibility to look at all options is something we think is important to have.
And then if I could, Madam Chair,
yes,
just
Senator Wilkowski.
And does the governor or the administration believe that we do need leadership changes at Angda at this point?
Well, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we have gone through some difficult experiences over the last year in terms of trying to get cooperative efforts between parties. They've happened in fits and spurts and false starts, and that's been a point of frustration. And it may be the easiest way to overcome some of those obstacles is to change faces, change the individual personal dynamics that are going on in order to move forward. And if that's the way to get to progress, then that's something that we want to be able, that the administration wants to be able to consider.
And just follow up on that, Madam Chair. This is a corporation authority created by the voters, and I guess where does the authority lie? My understanding is it's the board of directors of Angda is essentially the final arbiter of who leads Angda, and the governor gets to appoint those people, but ultimately it's their decision. Is that an accurate assessment?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that is correct. The corporation is led by a 7-member board of directors, and the governor makes those appointments. Those appointments, I would note, are not subject to legislative confirmation because it's not a quasi-judicial entity.
And Mr. Arash, question for you. On the ballot initiative itself, a lot of discussion about what people were voting for when they voted for Angda. You know that is a common conversation that's had. But specifically, the ballot language said that the authority would be created for the purpose of developing, constructing, managing, and operating a gas pipeline from the North Slope of Alaska and a spur line to South Central Alaska natural gas distribution grid. And so my question is just more philosophical. The authority coming from the people for this goal of creating a pipeline. Some say they envisioned a quasi-governmental entity that would live on into existence and have all these other tentacles to it. And some say, no, that really what the people were doing is they were voting because they want to see a natural gas pipeline. and they've wanted one for many years, and the frustration that they had could be exercised at the ballot. So that said, I guess I'd like to hear a little bit about what this governor thinks with respect to what the people were saying in that vote, and to the extent of whatever it is you believe she believes they were saying, how is that or is that not consistent with an expansion of ANGDA? And if people were going to the ballot box today, would they be voting for the kinds of things that are in this expansion language at the ballot box?
Madam Chair, the conversations I've had with the governor about ANGDA, the history of ANGDA, I know that she voted for the initiative, and I know that she believes in the vision, the mission of one of the primary drafters and real workhorses on that, and that's Mr. Scott Hayworth. I have not had a conversation with her about what she thinks the voters were thinking. But I would just take a step back and observe that when you look at the voter returns on that particular ballot question, it wasn't South Central Alaska and the Rail Belt all voting yes and everybody else voting no. Everybody in every district voted for that initiative. I think it carried in every House district. And so I think that it is not an unfair characterization that every Alaskan hopes to and even expects to be able to receive natural gas service, particularly in a state that has as many gas resources as we do.
Sure. And so what about the question that I asked with respect to, do you think the voters today then would vote for a ballot proposition that reflects the language contained in Senate Bill 135?
Well,
I know it's difficult to speculate.
Madam Chair, as I'm not sure I can do that as a member of the administration, but just as somebody who's been in and around politics for 12 years, I would say that if this particular question was on the ballot, I would expect it to pass by a significant margin. And the reason for that is going back to the original tallies on the original ballot question. Voters don't get to choose to amend the language the way they would want it. They just get a yes or a no option at the ballot box. They don't get to say, well, I would vote for it if this part was changed or that part was eliminated. And so divining exactly what the voters as a group would or would not tolerate or approve, you know, just my speculation.
And then just one more, and Senator Thomas has a question. The reason I'm asking the questions is to, you know, this is a very unique proposition. It's a voter-created authority. It wasn't statutorily created. It was created by the people. And mm-hmm. Here we sit in the government expanding that, creating that. More dollars, more positions, more bureaucracy, all of the things that come with agencies. And so the reason I asked that question is really more to go back and remind ourselves about where ANGDA comes from. And so that to the extent that it's extended or contracted, I think it's important to go back to, you know, the original creation of it. And then so my final question is, you talked about it in the beginning, but really sort of where do you see in the next 10 years in looking at Alaska's future, looking at the need for a gas pipeline, the need to get affordable energy to rural Alaska, in Southeast Alaska and all parts of the state, in expanding ANGDA and looking out at both the private sector and other public sector entities such as the Denali Commission, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, which I would point out is the receiver for and the points for energy, looking at all the other public agencies, looking at the private sector itself, where does ANGDA fit in? in the next decade? What is the vision for ANGDA in the next 10 years?
Well, I think, Madam Chair, that the best way to identify where ANGDA fits in is you go back to the actual title of the organization, the Natural Gas Development Authority. And the kind of work that ANGDA has been engaged in and that we envision them continuing to pursue is in that development sphere. Those early dollars for identifying, estimating the cost of, and planning the work that would then be picked up by a private entity to actually take on as an investment that makes sense. In terms of a bureaucracy, I wouldn't characterize our vision of ANGDA as being some new super agency whatsoever. But with regard to the opportunities for natural gas development in the state, use of the natural gas at the most efficient and economic level, we as administration continue to maintain that the best way to make gas available to Alaskans is through a large diameter pipeline that helps secure both the delivery of gas at the most efficient level possible, but also will help stabilize and secure our fiscal future as a state. The challenges we face in the cost and availability of energy all around Alaska are significant, to say the least. The challenges presented in each nook and cranny of Alaska are different and have to be solved in different ways. And so coming back around then to the identification of AHFC and these other pieces of state government, it is clear that we need to work on identifying a single point of contact, as it were. And right now we have programs in the Department of Commerce, over at the Alaska Energy Authority, over at AHFC, and the Department of Health and Social Services that all have something to do with energy. I can only imagine what it must be like as a local community planner or organizer trying to identify how to make something happen. And so we have very methodically taken steps to revitalize the Alaska Energy Authority with the appointment of Mr. Hagenson last year as the executive director. For years, the ADA and AEA executive director were one and the same. And we have not sought to just throw money at the problem without a plan, but we are identifying the work that particular agency can and should be doing and how best to do it with consideration for fiscal prudence, balancing that against the need for action.
Okay, I'm going to go to Senator Thomas and then Senator Wilkowski. It might behoove you when you have a second to step back, maybe even in the interim. I'm envisioning an org chart, mm-hmm. an energy organizational chart, because myself, as an energy chair in working through on energy policy in the interim, I have done this in my own work to try and envision all of the state agencies and all of the federal agencies that have something to say on the topic of energy, and to the extent that their authority, where does it lie, and so on. And this administration might want to consider how they see that. I have seen efforts, and I don't disagree, that was a bold move to appoint Steve and to take AEA to its own independent new status. I have a emerging energy and technology fund that we've mm-hmm. specifically directed to AEA in recognition that it seems to be the appropriate place. But I think it could be helpful when you're talking about expanding the authority of an entity that oversees energy development on some level, that you want to educate us and the legislature and voters about where that fits in the big picture.
Sure.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that would be also useful for all the other departments of government, I think, to see how we're coordinating amongst. So I was going to mention the energy, but I think for everybody that would be helpful because there's a lot of duplication. Back to the topic at hand, though, the bill appears to be an expansion of maybe what takes place and where we consider what markets, what is the regions of the state we talk about where the gas may come from. But I see that as a good thing because I see it as a more practical aspect of the way we're looking at it. I also see that as actually focusing things a little bit more on what we're attempting to do here with the ANGDA language, the creation of ANGDA. So I'm encouraged by just the concept here of what's going on, and hopefully that is the plan, is to focus more. I understand that is it, and it may include other folks in the planning and the movement, but I do agree that ANGDA's purpose is to maybe put some of the get some of the planning out of the way and some of the concepts of how we would move forward, and that will be helpful to a private entity that wants to build something at a later date. I think that is probably one of the best things that state government can do, is try and look at how the process would take place, maybe standardize some things, look at how they could expedite things be taking place, and also look at routes and permitting and those types of things. So I think, even though that's not said here or even implied, I think that's where we're headed, and I think that's a good thing. And also that fits in with your developmental spear, I guess I get that a little bit from your comments regarding that. So I appreciate that. And the coordination, I think, is a great thing. So I don't know if I have a question. It's more just a comment. I think you're headed in the right direction here. So
thank you. Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you. Two issues. Number one is your statement that you made a few minutes ago that you still believe, the administration still believes, that our best prospect for in-state gas is through a large diameter line. Is that, did I hear you correctly on that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that's correct.
Okay. Why then are we hiring Harry Noah and saying that we want to build a bullet line? That's not a large scale, large diameter line.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the nature of the work that Mr. Noah is doing is not with a predetermined outcome. But we know that there is, we think, some need for gas delivery from outside of Cook Inlet into the South Central market. And it could be in a time period that there may be a need before a large diameter pipeline is operating. There are uncertainties about when that pipeline will happen, and the large diameter pipeline, and if there is a need to fill the gap in the meantime, we need to know what our options are, and the lead time for a small diameter pipeline, a bullet pipeline, is significant. I think we sometimes, as a state, get used to the magnitude of everything in Alaska that we ever think or dream about. And, we've been talking about a 48-inch pipeline, 1,700 miles for so long that the idea of an 800 pipeline that's 20 or 24 inches seems small, but in fact it's world class, would be one of the largest developments in the world. And so the lead time involved in identifying that particular kind of project is significant enough and long enough that if we don't start working on it now, it may be too late to consider that as an option in 2011 or 2012 when we know what our choices really are. And so this is, in some respects, making sure that we are maintaining our options to satisfy the needs of Alaskans here in the state. But it, again, is not being pursued with a predetermined outcome in mind.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I've based a lot of my decisions on this issue on statements that have been made by the administration, statements that have been made by TransCanada. All the statements that I've heard are that the large-scale line is scheduled to be completed in 2018. And today is the first day that I'm hearing the administration say there are uncertainties about when the large-scale line will happen. Is this, do you have new information that the large-scale line will not be ready in 2018?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, in the analysis that was performed by the two commissioners of the Department of Natural Resources and Revenue last year in reviewing the AGIA application submitted by TransCanada, the schedule proposed by TransCanada for completion and first gas in 2018 was determined to be achievable yet aggressive. We did cost and schedule curves that weighted the probabilities of various things happening on the critical path that would result in first gas. And I don't recall off the top of my head whether our 50% case occurred in 2020 or 2021, but I know it was not 2018. That was at the lower end of the curve. We still think that that is achievable and possible if everything goes right. But if, for example, there is some nature of delay in acquiring the FERC certificate or getting the NPA and NEB certificates perfected, there are regulatory things that could delay the project. There are logistical delays that could occur. One of the major concerns that our technical team had was in the ability to deliver the components of the GTP on a sea lift vessel. Due to the constraints in the seasonal opportunity for delivery up to Prudhoe Bay, you know, if you don't make the barge, you don't lose a day for a day. There are points in the calendar where a day costs you 6 months or 9 months. And so there are some logistical challenges on top of the regulatory challenges. And so it's not that we have new information. We just have recognized, I think, from the beginning that you set a schedule, you work it, but the when the specific point in time will be that gas is delivered is uncertain. And so if South Central Alaska is going to have all the gas that it needs until 2016, that presents a certain set of challenges. If it has all the gas it needs until 2022, it's a different question fundamentally. And so a lot of the work that we are going to be doing over the next year that Mr. Noah has cited as being necessary, and we would agree, is to identify what Cook Inlet already has that's identifiable in its known fields. And there are gradations of recoverable reserves from a single field. And that is work that the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Oil and Gas, is working on. They're also working on assessments of what it would cost to explore for, find, and develop new fields in Cook Inlet and what that cost and price ultimately would be and what sort of schedule might be possible. Because we need to fully flesh out what the need is in South Central before we can really identify a supply for the gas that would go through a pipeline that leads to South Central. South Central is a constrained market. It's not a liquid market. If it were a liquid market like the Alberta Trading Hub that turns gas over 7 or 8 times every day in the marketplace, we would have a different set of circumstances. But that's not what we have in South Central. We have a smaller market that gets tied up contractually for periods of time, and so the opportunity to place gas is a bit of a challenge. Nevertheless, we think that the reserves in South Central are able to produce for some time. We just need to understand at what rate they can produce and how that meets up with the daily demand, particularly the winter peaks.
Senator Kukesh.
I hope this isn't a criticism of the chairman or the members of the committee, but we have a pretty simple bill in front of us called the gas line. The Act clarified the purpose of the last Natural Gas Development Authority, and related. We spent 40 minutes now talking about issues that I don't think relate to this particular bill. I'd really appreciate it if we could spend our time on this particular bill and this outline black changes that are in here. I know we have a chance to talk to the administration through Mr. Baelish here, but I think we can do that on an issue other than this particular bill. And maybe I'm out of line here, but I'd really like to get back to this bill and maybe get it
nothing's
worked,
out of line.
We're, worked we one way or the other here.
Opinions. So yeah. Thank you, Senator Kukesh. Okay, so we will go. Is there anything else you wanted to add in your formal testimony? And then I'll go to Harold Hines and Paul Foos, who's here in the room, David Otness in Cordova, and Bill Warren in Kenai. Anything else?
That concludes it for me, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to wait and see if there are any follow-up questions.
Thank you. And then just one other note, let me know on Riga when you're ready this next week or whatever.
I'd be happy to.
Okay. Harold, are you there? Good afternoon.
Madam Chair, this is Harold Hines. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Okay. I'm getting a little feedback here, but I'll do the best I can. I'd like to just sort of be concise and focus a little bit on some things that maybe would amplify several of the areas that Mr. Baelish touched on. Number one, ENDA in its formation in 2002 really didn't come into existence until about 2003. One of the first chores we did was we drew a diagram that illustrated the benefits to Alaskans, because it is correct that ENDA was born of the initiative process and of frustration. And it was frustration over two things. One, the fact that nothing was happening on the pipeline. And number two, even if something did happen on the pipeline, most of the people in the state felt it would not necessarily benefit them. So one of our focuses immediately was to identify what we saw as the potential benefits that an ENDA as a public corporation in the state could deliver to the citizens. And we drew a chart, and we've never changed that chart, and it's still in front of us. And one of the interesting things about it is it deals with gas for electric power and barging LPG fuel on the Yukon, and local gas distribution banks, and a spur line from Glen Ellen into Cook Inlet, and maybe petrochemical and barging LNG, and all those things that we kind of talk about. And the reason we drew those on the chart was that we felt that North Slope gas, as far as in-state use, was not a simple issue of A to B. It was, number one, the system. And if you go back and look at the ballot measure language that you've been discussing, you'll see that it describes the design and construction of the, quote, pipeline system. It doesn't say of the pipeline. It talks about the operation and maintenance of the pipeline system, and so on. The acquisition of natural gas market share is sufficient to ensure the long-term feasibility of the pipeline system project. And again, if you've seen our more recent presentations, I believe even before this committee, earlier this year, we draw a diagram that has a big pipeline on it, and then we draw what I guess I would call a spur line off of it, but we've got a whole bunch of pipelines, arrows coming in and out and around and everything else. And it's our belief that the in-state gas pipeline system, underlying system, should be a proper focus. And certainly we feel, as a public corporation of the state, benefit-driven, that is one of the things we've been working on. And I guess that's why we probably haven't had a lot of trouble with the language that we were presented with in terms of the direction of the ballot measure and kind of the evolution. And the way I would characterize it is that over the last 6 years, the question we've constantly asked ourselves is, where are the best opportunities for ANGDA to contribute to the benefit of the people? And then secondly, where can ANGDA offer solutions for what face the biggest problems the state faces in the gas issues? And what we basically found is that one of our roles is to keep options open. And at times, various people have thought with great clarity that they knew what the answer was, and they wanted to go down that pathway. And while we've never disagreed with that, we've also pointed out at times that it was important to keep the options open. And as far as the future of ANGDA, you've touched a little bit on that. This bill, I think, speaks to that in a positive way. And that's because I believe the longer-term evolution of ANGDA is to help in the finance sense of private sector in-state gas-related projects. And that pipeline finance emphasis will require the kind of clarifications that are included in this bill. It's one thing for all of us to talk about funding levels in the budget, the capital budget of a few million dollars, and certainly we can reach some clarity amongst ourselves as to what money's to be used and how it's to be used and those type of things. But when you go to bankers, especially bankers in, so let's say, New York, and you're asking for hundreds of millions of dollars of commitment, you better have clarity, and you better have clarity in the statute. And so I support the bill in the sense that it provides that type of clarity. The other part, I guess, I just would bring to your attention is that we believe that besides the fact that the authority of the board is fairly clear in the statute, that, again, we hearken back to also Article 8 of the Constitution, which deals with resources, and specifically identifies the legislature as the body that makes policy on that resource development. And in this case, the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority looks to the legislature for that policy guidance, as well as the leadership of the executive branch in setting forward how we move forward. So, I guess we would welcome the legislative interaction through this bill. And again, we would ask for your support in continuing to keep on the table a variety of options related to North Slope gas and in-state gas use that provide benefits to Alaska. And with that quick ramble, I'll be available for questions as you may wish.
Thank you very much, Harold. We appreciate all of your work as well. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. And Harold, just briefly, because I know that we've got other people online, but what do you see this changing your ability at all to work with NSTAR? And have you worked with NSTAR on developing a bullet line?
Senator, through the chair, basically, next Wednesday at our board meeting, we're going to be releasing the final draft or the final version of a report that was done for us by Scott Bayless on public-private partnerships. And if you remember back to last July, the challenge that was put on the table to ANGDA and to NSTAR was to see if we could work in a public-private partnership. And it turns out, I think, once you kind of read through this report and you think about it, that there probably isn't a strong basis for either of us to join together in a public-private partnership. And I guess the fast explanation of that is simply that when you look at a public-private partnership approach, you have to compare that to a project that is done either fully public or fully private. And unless both sides of the coin see virtue to being in the middle, you might say, that there is no basis for a public-private partnership. And very frankly, after reading the draft of this report, I guess I kind of understand why we probably weren't able to find some marriage with NSTAR. And that's okay, because there are projects that clearly don't fit public-private partnerships and are undertaken as private entities, and there clearly are projects that are done in public rather than private. And in this case, I think the reality is that NSTAR should be allowed to move forward and look at whatever they want as a private sector project. I think the challenge for us is to see if there are some financing ideas we can develop that in the ultimate support that effort, but achieve a benefit for the public in the long run. And again, I don't know what those answers are right now, but again, this report we'll be releasing next Wednesday, I think, provides a good start in the thinking towards that end.
Thank you. I look forward to that report.
Perfect. And thank you. And Harold, we'll, when Senator Wilikowski and I get back to town, it'd be nice. We can set up a time to talk to you in greater detail about some of these ideas. We appreciate it. It's just been a busy session.
I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today. Thank you very much, Senator.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, Paul Foos. And we've got two more after this, and then we're going to bring up Senator Pascavan's bill.
I'll be brief, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Paul Foos speaking as a citizen of the state of Alaska and a gas consumer in Anchorage. In support of the bill, I was one of the original drafters of the initiative, and so I believe it was an oversight on our part to not include these other regions. When you look at it, the language is fairly tight. You do have a paper in front of you called Western Alaska Energy Corridors that I wrote, and just came from my work on the Donlin Creek mine. Their biggest issue out there was getting fuel, and actually the Red Dog still has issues. I've talked to them, and the idea would be they could be anchor tenants and we could, you know, distribute gas out there. I did take this to Steve Hagenson, and he looked at it and he said, well, my main mission is really electricity, but based on NSTAR numbers, he figured that gas could be, the tariff would be about $10 per 1,000 cubic feet. And right now, if you converted what they're paying in oil out there, they're paying about $30 per MCF if you converted it to gas. So there is some room there, and to have that considered, I think that's important. Very briefly on the role of ANGDA, when we wrote this, we wanted two things. We wanted ANGDA to have the powers to help make something happen, but the other side of it was to be able to protect the consumer. And I think this is kind of what Harold was saying. If ANGDA participates in something and provides tax-exempt financing and savings to a developer, they are going to demand that that be passed on in savings to the consumer. And that's only right that that be done if they're going to step in. If the company they're working with wants to put all that money in their pocket rather than give it to the consumer, then there is no basis for a public-private partnership. And maybe I'm saying a little more direct than Harold was, but if the public entity is going to help and participate, the consumers need to get the benefit. Now, you see on the back page a letter from Senator Hoffman that he wrote asking that it be done, and, you know, I guess apparently it couldn't without this change in the law, but I would say for any of you that are on the Finance Committee, if we're not able to get this law passed, you could still allow this study to be done by changing the language authorizing the appropriation to ANGDA for this, and just say that it could be used for these other things, to do an initial investigation of it, because this is something that could actually fix the problem in Western Alaska, and we do everything we can to try to help every step of the way, but we have to look at an overall fix or we're going to continue to have real problems out there.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Mr. Foos. And I know there are a lot of different ideas, because it is so late in the session, about how to accomplish the goal. And to that end, we'll finish up testimony. I'm going to hold the bill over one time to allow those discussions to continue, but generally agree with exactly what you said, and that, you know, we need to envision a more comprehensive look at energy distribution, natural gas distribution throughout our state, and and generally conclude that the voters would see it that way, too.
Well, Madam Chair, just in to follow up very briefly on that, we've got to keep all the options open right now. If anyone told you today that they knew it was going to happen, they'd be wrong. I mean, no one knows what's going to happen with this. So we have to keep the options open and have the homework done that if something doesn't happen, if we have a failed open season, we've got a plan B, we've got something figured out to move ahead, that we don't start scratching our head, what do we do now, that we're ready for any eventuality.
I agree. Senator Kukesh.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As one of the writers of or drafters of the initiative, have you heard from anybody on the initiative side of the fence that you were on who would oppose this?
No, sir.
Okay.
Through the chair, I think everybody would support this. The purpose is to serve the whole state. Another possibility, if a line does go through Canada, would be a spur line down to either Haines or down the Taku to bring gas into south central Alaska. So this would also authorize that to be able to be done.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Paul. We appreciate it. And your years of hard work on the subject. Okay, David Otness there in Cordova. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon,
and thanks.
Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, and thank you for your patience.
No, I find this very interesting. My name is David Otness. I'm a layman to this on one hand. I'm a resident of Cordova, and I'm very concerned that we continue to follow through utilizing the experience that ANGDA brings to the table. We've got sort of very large pictures to look at here, and I think it's within the scope of ANGDA to actually be capable of covering these issues statewide all the way down through south and western Alaska. Am I breaking up?
A little bit.
Oh, okay. And one of my concerns about Kenny ANGDA's authority, it'll lose that statewide. And I don't think ANSTAR's scope to a corporation. And in fact, I'd still like to see the possible utility districts in terms of an industry contract to even operate as another possibility. If we look to countries like Norway, who coincidentally, their permanent fund, which was based on ours, is $400 billion.
David, just so you know, you're breaking up to the point that it's not we're not able to hear what you're saying. So a couple of choices. One would be to switch the phone line. The next would be to call back in when the bill is back up again. And the third would be to submit whatever you'd like to say in writing. It could be handwritten here to the committee, and we can all read it.
I'll go ahead and probably submit written testimony. Thank you very much.
Okay, we appreciate it. And we'll look forward to hearing from you, okay? Sorry about the phone there. Okay, the last person I have is in Kenai, the LIO there, Bill Warren.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for letting me testify.
You're welcome.
I'm William Warren. I reside in McKiskey, and I represent my grandkids. So I've lived and worked here for the last 57 years, a lot of it in the inland. I support Senate Bill 135, and I voted for ANGDA in 2002, along about 70% of the people. At that time, I wanted a simple thing. I wanted in-state gas. And I figured, well, you don't have gas in one area and you have it in another, you run a pipeline. Since then, we've got mired down in a lot of politics, maybe apathy. I don't blame any of it on ANGDA. They've done a sterling job. We've got $1 billion in natural gas infrastructure. It's clean. You can run everything on it, house, cars. It works everywhere, be it propane to the bush and CNG to Southeastern. Yes, renewables have come up. It will complement with renewables. And I think in-state gas comes first because renewables will take a while to phase in. Cook Inlet. I worked on the two 12-inch lines there in Turnigan Arm for Charmnell and Gay and Taylor in 1960. We had 8 trillion feet of gas. Now we got 1 trillion. a real good deal for us, and it's not pretty anymore. I know the operators out there. I've read the RCA report from Cape Girardeau, and I know that there's been a lot of greed, gaming, and everything going on. Uncertainty about supply, deliverability, and everything. And we do know one thing, the price is going up, up, up. Our other option is to import LNG from communist Russia, no way. By the time we get all the tariffs and plant converted, the price will be very high. Ventilators are Vinstar. They have no ROWs. Environmental deal's not complete. According to Hanley with the Darko, they won't have gas on the Maybe Basin until 2016. And it keeps getting complicated. Congressperson Lisa Murkowski wants now to give authorization for a line to go across Denali Park. There remains to be seen presidential write-off and everything. You want to run a little skinny 24-inch line, schedule 1,450 pounds PSI. It will not dense phase the NGLs, which we need for industry, because you need to run that at 2,500 pounds. Also, I want oversight with in-state gas in direct deal with the producers. I don't trust the price deal. I don't trust the deals that are made. Witness the gasoline deals we're going on now. We need oversight on our natural gas. That leaves ANDA. They've done sterling work with engineering from the very first. Their line graphs and everything going was perfect. The legislators did not pass it, and the governor didn't pass it. They had other agendas. And they went on to Plan B, which was very good. I've got copies of that. And everything that they've done has been going forward at flying speed, and it has frankly been the government that has not proceeded forward in a timely manner. So despite political problems, despite all the interferences with this in-state gas line, it is just a pipeline. It's a 24-inch pipeline going north to south. And part of this bill says to jumpstart work immediately on an in-state pipeline. That does not mean to wait forever for that mega project. You guys and actors are going to be burning your furniture to stay warm if you don't get this thing going. Now, I know that mega project is in there, and it's the gorilla, the 1,000-pound gorilla, but we have got the in-state gas considerations first. It's even before the renewables, and we're all interested in renewables, but this comes first. And I appreciate you very much testifying, and I'm quite frankly impatient. Yeah. I want to see things going. We're in a depression. We need this project. It's big. We need to train our apprentices to get ready for the future work. And just everything gold-plated with this if we just get going. I could go on a long time, but I won't, but I really appreciate you letting me testify. And ANCA has been doing very good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Warren. And a lot of nodding heads in the room and from committee members. We agree with you, and we're trying to do all we can here in the State Senate to get it moving forward. So thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Anyone else here in the audience wishing to testify on Senate Bill 135? Anyone online that I've overlooked? Okay, hearing and seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and set this bill aside and open it back up for testimony again next week. So with that, we do just have a little bit of time left, and I want to get to Senate Bill 162. Senator Joe Pasquin. Thank you, Mr. Balash. And I did incorrectly state earlier that Senator Thomas was pro-offering this bill, but I know he's in spirit right there with you in Fairbanks. So welcome to Senate Energy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to present Senate Bill 162 to the Senate Energy Committee. It is my intent in this bill to present a solution for a very serious issue in Interior Alaska, but it's not just Interior Alaska that this bill would apply to. It applies to our good friends in rural Alaska and also to some extent to South East and South Central Alaska. And The statistic that I would like to leave with the committee today is that approximately 80% of rural Alaska and interior Alaska use heating oil as their primary source of heat. And, you know, I appreciate the fact that this legislation will need more work. I would request assistance from the people from rural Alaska and southeastern Alaska. And I want to thank you for allowing this discussion to begin here in the Energy Committee, where I believe it is very appropriate that that discussion begin. And I look forward to your questions and the feedback and comment from the administration as well. The residents of Alaska who do rely on heating oil to keep warm during the long Alaskan winters need a specific short-term solution that meets their unique needs, in addition to the many other promising long-term solutions that are currently being considered. So this is a short-term solution. And that Senate Bill 62 puts a solution in place when we expect that the price of heating oil will again rise and maybe rise as rapidly as it has declined in the last year. In the past year, Alaskans' discretionary income evaporated, consumer debt has risen sharply, and the cost of home heating oil is still beyond the ability of many Alaskans to pay. A sharp rise in heating oil on top of this environment, while beneficial to the state's budget, would economically devastate individual Alaskans, business owners, and their families. Senate Bill 162 would require the state of Alaska to offset home and commercial heating costs when the price of a barrel of crude rises to the point where the state of Alaska is enjoying a surplus. In other words, a budget surplus is when this bill would take effect, if and only if the price of heating oil triggers the measures outlined in Senate Bill 162. Is it reasonable to ask the people of Alaska to pay $2.50 per gallon while the state pays the balance from its surplus directly to the home heating distributors? With that temporary solution in place, Alaskans can focus their attention on the long-term solution, which will restore optimism about our economic future, protect our families and businesses, and allow us to concentrate on our number one priority, certainly before this Senate Energy Committee, which is renewable and sustainable energy solutions for Alaska. I would submit that Senate Bill 162 is easily administered. The dealers of heating oil, as part of their current reporting requirements, already report to the state of Alaska in a monthly form a breakdown of the quantities of the various petroleum products that they sell, and that does include the heating oil classification. The quantities of heating oil are verifiable and objectively determinable. Senate Bill 162 is efficient. It does not create a bureaucracy of paperwork or a massive government employment program to operate. Rather than distributing checks or debit cards to tens of thousands of individuals, the state would make a payment directly to the heating oil distributors. It is a relatively simple way to utilize a surplus in the state's bank account when the state is in a budget surplus mode, and due to the high cost of crude, to reduce the cost of heating oil to the Alaskans who need it at that time. Senate Bill 162 requires the consumer price of heating oil to increase each of the next 3 years. In other words, it doesn't stay at $2.50, and the reason for that is to reinforce the need of Alaskans to conserve and to switch to alternative energies or to find the long-term solutions. A couple of examples of what friends of mine in interior Alaska went through this one winter ago when the price of home heating oil reached $4.50 a gallon. In order for a distributor to even go to their home, they have to have a minimum of 100 gallons distributed or brought to their home. If the consumer didn't have $450, there's no delivery. So what were people forced to do? They were forced with a 5-gallon gas can to go to the gas station to get diesel. It's a high-grade heating fuel to get 3 or 4 gallons to try to make it through a minus 50 degree night. Fairbanks was on the verge of literally Fairbanksons freezing in the dark because of the $4.50 a gallon price. And also the distributors, when they ended last winter, their accounts receivable levels were at unsustainably high amounts. That if the prices of crude had not collapsed in the last year, and if the price of heating oil had not correspondingly dropped as well. They would not have been able to have entered this last winter by providing any credit to the consumers because they could not afford losing their business because there would be so high of a accounts receivable. Just another point that I'd like to make, the average home, 1,300, 1,400 square feet, was costing about $5,000 a year to heat as compared to about $1,200 if the person was on natural gas. So we have this massively higher amount of money, but it's also important to understand that in interior Alaska, the per capita income is 20% below the national average. So this was a community. All of interior Alaska, when you have $5,000 average heating cost, we have per capita income that is 20% below the national average. The entire interior Alaska could not afford to remain in that situation for another year. So essentially what I'd like to do today is to make sure that this Energy Committee understands, I'd hope that they would understand that and recognize that the crushing costs of energy when the price of crude does go up, to recognize that, and secondly, to convey the message that now is the time when we are before the crisis of high energy costs to put together a program to deal with it rather than again to wait for another crisis to be upon us and us to have done nothing when we likely know that that crisis will soon and hopefully be here when the price of crude oil and again the corresponding price of home heating oil also increases. In part responding to the previous testimony on ANGDA, immediately in this room, in the Labor and Commerce Committee, we do have a Doyon presentation, and that does deal with natural gas issues, and so I think this all ties together, and so I would invite all of you, if you are so interested, to listen to that presentation, and it may be helpful as far as another long-term solution, but Senate Bill 162 is a short-term solution.
What time is that presentation?
Starting at 1 o'clock, Madam Chair.
Okay. Excellent. Okay, thank you very much, Senator Passavant. Questions to begin? Yeah, very well laid out. We do have one individual wishing to testify, Scott Ruby. Scott, are you there?
I'm here. I didn't need to testify. I was just here to answer any questions that may come up.
Excellent.
Because I work with the Division of Community and Regional Affairs, and we run a bulk fuel bridge loan program.
Okay, excellent. Questions for Mr. Ruby at this time? Okay, yeah, this is innovative, thoughtful. It looks a lot like, you know, last year when we simplified the energy bill down to a $1,200 check payout. I was very opposed to it because I thought that we were not directing the money toward those specific energy needs that people had. I really like the approach contained in this bill and think that that's the kind of thing we're looking for rather than checks that sort of go out and can be used not only by people who are not consumers of energy in the state of Alaska, but can certainly be used for other things. So this is innovative, and I know you've asked us to look at it and continue to work on it and to incorporate it into the work of the Energy Committee in the interim, and we'd like to do that with your help, and we're hoping to get out to Fairbanks as well. I look forward to talking with you about how we might factor this into our visit out there from the Energy Committee, and we appreciate your testimony. Anything else you'd like to add?
Other than thank you, and I welcome the opportunity to work with the Energy Committee and its work in this area. So,
thank you. Anyone else here in the audience wishing to testify on Senate Bill 162 that I have overlooked? Anyone online? Okay, hearing and seeing none, then we will close public testimony for now on Senate Bill 162 and set that bill aside, and we're adjourned.